Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Grow Fund, Redistricting Priorities for Craddock, by Stuart Doreen. State Representative Tom Craddock said the legislative session, which is set to begin today, will be about the deficit and redistricting. In other words, he's seen it all before. The Midland Reporter-Telegram, the Midland Republican, told the Reporter-Telegram this session reminds him of 2003, when he became the first Republican Speaker of the House since Reconstruction. Of course, in 2003, there wasn't coronavirus. The most experienced legislature in Texas state government history will be a newbie like others entering this session, and the restrictions it has put on hearings and overall practices that most are used to. He also said it is likely to keep everything simple, and legislators focused on the priorities, which he said starts with balancing the budget and redistricting. I see the session as basically, get the major things over, Craddock said. About the budget. Craddock said having less money will require cuts across the board. He said there was a lot of money spent on public education and other new programs during the last session, 2019. The Dallas Morning News reported this week that the state needs about $5 billion more than taxes currently generate to maintain current services. Can we fund the programs from last session, Craddock said? I don't know whether that will happen. He said, in addition to education and health services, there will be a focus on programs related to the pandemic, but there is a likelihood that legislators pass what we need and go home. About COVID. When it comes to dealing with COVID, there will be bills dealing with spending and bills dealing with Governor Greg Abbott's actions in trying to help keep the state's residents safe. Craddock said he's heard there are as many as 70 bills anticipated having to do limiting the governor's power during a pandemic like COVID, the product of legislators telling their residents at home they were going to make changes. Craddock, however, said that doesn't guarantee legislators will have enough support for any one item. About redistricting. A growing population inside the state means Texans likely will add 3 new congressmen, Craddock said. Redistricting is a process performed every 10 years to draw the lines on legislative districts at the state and federal level. Midland and Odessa are currently in Texas Congressional District 11. Craddock said he is against splitting the counties into different districts and that it benefits Midland and Odessa to stay together. It shouldn't change, Craddock said, keeping up Midland and Odessa together. Craddock also doesn't expect much change with the state Senate district because of the population growth in Midland-Odessa, and that his House district, which includes Midland, is likely to include less counties after redistricting is completed. About a growing priority. The GROW bill needs to be done, he said Monday. The Generate Recurring Oil Wealth Texas Fund generally sets aside money for initiatives in areas significantly impacted by oil and gas production. In 2019, it overwhelmingly passed the House and died in the Senate. The bill calls for a commission to administer funds that come from the Rainy Day Fund or the State Savings Account, and advise the legislature on making appropriations to address infrastructure needs related to safety, health care, and education initiatives in those production-impacted regions. Passing the GROW bill will provide direction for Permian Basin companies about the state investment likely in areas like the Permian Basin, Craddock said. About the new speaker. Legislators are expected to make a Beaumont Republican, Dade Phelan, the next Speaker of the Texas House. Craddock called the fourth-term state representative and chairman of state affairs capable as anything and everything goes through the State Affairs Committee, so he has seen it all. This article is entitled Commissioner's Court Split on Salary Adjustment for MCSO Sergeants by Caitlin Randall. A raise for some sergeants with the Midland County Sheriff's Office failed in a split vote by county commissioners on Monday. Sheriff David Kreiner said he requested the change because several employees in supervisory roles are not being paid as much as others with the same title. The raise would have been for 8 patrol sergeants who are at a lower pay grade than their peers, according to Kreiner. A motion for the salary change failed in a 2-2 vote, with Commissioner Luis Sanchez abstaining from voting. Kreiner had requested to change the salaries of the affected sergeants from pay grade 19 to a pay grade 20 to match that of the officers who are being paid more. He said he noticed the pay discrepancy after taking office 9 months ago, but did not know why some employees were being paid less. "We all agree that something needs to be fixed, and I'm just asking that we fix that as we're able to today. We need to do the right thing," Kreiner said during Monday's meeting. The commissioners agreed that the salaries should be adjusted, but disagreed on when that should happen. Those who opposed raising the salaries Monday pointed to an earlier policy the county had adopted to not raise salaries this fiscal year because of the economic downturn. "Earlier this year, for a very, very good reason, we set a policy of no raises. That was part of our budgetary process," said Commissioner Scott Ramsey. "If we go against that policy now, we lose the trust of the other county employees and we damage the integrity of this court." Commissioner Robin Donnelly, who also voted against the item, said he believed the raises should be discussed during next year's budget session after the salaries of other sergeants outside of the patrol department were also reviewed for inconsistencies. Additionally, Donnelly noted that an across-the-board pay grade increase for patrol sergeants would mean employees who have been with the sheriff's office for a short time would receive larger percent raises than those who have been with MCSO longer. Although he abstained from voting, Sanchez said he was in favor of the raises, but at a later date. He said he was concerned approving the raises now would be unfair to other county department heads who have requested the same changes and had those requests denied. Commissioner Randy Prude said he voted in favor of the item because the county would not incur any additional costs from the raises. Kreiner requested the raises be paid with funds that had already been budgeted to MCSO this year. County Judge Terry Johnson also voted in favor of the raises, saying the sheriff's office could not be likened to the departments that requested salary changes for their employees and did not receive them. "I'm not going to compare the sheriff or somebody who goes out with a bulletproof vest and a pistol on their sides so they can go home at night to other county employees," he said. The next Commissioner's Court meeting will be 9 a.m., January 25th, at the Midland County Courthouse. This article is entitled Chef Opens Taco Cabo to Provide Unique Taco Experience by J.C. Lewis. The previous owner of Toro's Cafe has opened a new taco spot in Midland. Taco Cabo opened last week at 4401 North Big Spring Street. Owner and chef Miguel Ronquillo said the opportunity to move into the old Midland Meat Company's half-acre building, the half-acre moved to 1101 Washita, presented itself, and he wanted to launch a taco restaurant concept. "I've been a chef in Midland for 25 years," he said. "I thought we needed a fun taco place that's different than just regular Mexican food. That's how I came up with the Taco Cabo concept. It's like a Cabo San Lucas experience." Ronquillo started his cooking career at Racquet Club. He then moved to Midland Country Club and later on to Green Tree Country Club. He was also a chef at the Petroleum Club. Ronquillo also said he's worked at different Mexican restaurants in Midland. 3 years ago, Ronquillo had built the Toro's Cafe, but later sold it to the owner of Librado because of other projects Ronquillo was working on. The menu features shrimp tacos, fish tacos, vegetarian tacos, brisket tacos, chalupas, burritos, nachos, salad bowls. There also is a kids' menu with cheeseburgers and chicken fingers. Taco Cabo is currently open for lunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. Ronquillo said, with spring and summer coming up, the restaurant will extend its hours and people can enjoy the patio seating when it's not as cold. Approved. Planning and Zoning Commissioners approved Fair to Midland's application for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a bar. Fair to Midland was announced in the summer of 2019 and has recently started construction at 1115 Tradewinds Boulevard. For more information, visit mrt.com/business/article/planning-and-zoning-turns-down-electronic-158460.php. Now open. Boom or Bust Liquors is now open at 1401 North Loop 250 West. The location is open 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. For more information, visit facebook.com/boomorbustliquors. This is the news page. This article is entitled State: COVID Patients Above 15% in Midland Region by Stuart Doreen. The Midland-Odessa region of the state is again above the level that could mean business occupancy restrictions are put back into place. The Department of State Health Services reported early Monday that the percentage of COVID patients compared to all hospital capacity jumped from 12.41% on Friday to 16.22% on Saturday and 15.96% on Sunday. According to Governor Greg Abbott's executive order, if any trauma service area has 7 consecutive days in which the number of COVID-19 hospitalized patients exceeds 15% of total hospital capacity, restrictions are put in place that include 50% business occupancy. A region then must have 7 consecutive days in which the number of COVID-19 hospitalized patients is 15% or less of total hospital capacity to return to 75% occupancy for businesses and allow resumption of elective surgeries in certain counties. Currently, 18 of the state's 23 trauma service areas or regions face such restrictions. At Midland Memorial Hospital, the percentage of COVID patients compared to the total population went from 28% Friday to 29% Saturday and Sunday to 30% on Monday, according to statistics from Midland Health. The Midland-Odessa region, or TSAJ, includes Andrews, Pecos, and 9 other counties. Hospitals in the smaller counties transfer their coronavirus patients to other hospitals, making the percentage of COVID-19 hospitalization for the region much lower than hospitalizations in Midland and Odessa, according to MMH CEO and President Russell Myers. Businesses in Midland previously returned to 50% occupancy on November 23rd because of the high coronavirus hospitalization. Restrictions were then lifted on December 17th after hospitalizations fell below the 15% threshold. If COVID-19 hospitalizations for the region continue to stay above 15% this week, businesses will return to 50% occupancy on Friday. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled Former Midland Sheriff Candidate Arrested for Indecent Assault, from Staff Reports. Former Midland County Sheriff candidate Joe Lozano was arrested Saturday after inappropriately touching a package delivery person. Lozano, 64, was charged with indecent assault, a Class A misdemeanor, and indecent exposure, a Class B misdemeanor. Midland police were dispatched at about 2 p.m. Saturday to Lozano's appliance store in reference to an assault. The victim, a package delivery driver, was on her route when she stopped at the appliance store and asked if she could use the business's restroom, according to the arrest affidavit. While on her way to the restroom, Lozano began grabbing her in inappropriate areas over her clothing. The woman stated she pushed him away and was able to make it to the restroom, but didn't have her phone to call for help, according to the affidavit. When she exited the restroom, Lozano exposed himself and began to touch himself, according to the affidavit. While exiting the building, Lozano tried to hug her and grab her inappropriately again, according to the affidavit. Upon exiting, she called her supervisor, who immediately called the Midland Police Department, according to the affidavit. Officers arrived on the scene and questioned Lozano, who initially stated no one had stopped by the business at the time of question. Lozano agreed to show officers video footage from inside the building, but there was no footage from the time frame that the assault occurred, according to the affidavit.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, January 12, 2021. Enjoying the snow. Left to right, Cooper Gernins, Abigail Donnelly, Garrett Donnelly, Thane Gernins, Miles Donnelly, and Paige Gernins. The snowmen are, from left, Darth Vader, two stormtroopers, and Boba Fett. Snow totals. The following are snow totals from the weather event on Sunday. La Mesa, 9 inches. Lubbock, 7.6 inches. Gale Snyder, 7.5 inches. Lovington, New Mexico, 7 inches. Jowl, New Mexico, 7 inches. Coahoma, 6.8 inches. Colorado City, 6 inches. Abilene, 5.3 inches. Big Spring, 4.5 inches. San Angelo, 3.8 inches. Midland, 3.2 inches. Carlsbad, New Mexico, 2.7 inches. Source: National Weather Service. Gas prices. Midland Odessa gas prices have risen 12.7 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $2.19 a gallon Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations. Gas prices in Midland Odessa are 26.3 cents per gallon higher than a month ago and stand 24.9 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are gasoline prices on January 11 in Midland, Odessa, going back 10 years. 2020, $2.44 a gallon. 2019, $2.44 a gallon. 2018, $2.44 a gallon. 2017, $2.16 a gallon. 2016, $1.74 a gallon. 2015, $2.08 a gallon. 2014, $3.08 a gallon. 2013, $3.14 a gallon. 2012, $3.27 a gallon. 2011, $3.01 a gallon. Source: GasBuddy.com. Meetings. City Council, 10 a.m. Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. When it's open, Midland County Tax Assessor, Collector, 2110 North A Street, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Wednesday, Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, 688-4810. Midland Central Appraisal District, 4631 Andrews Highway, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, 699-4991. Department of Public Safety, Driver's License Office, 2800 Wright Drive, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday and Wednesday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays, 686-1120. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, January 12th, the 12th day of 2021. There are 353 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On January 12, 2000, in a 5-4 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court in Illinois versus Wardlow gave police broad authority to stop and question people who run at the side of an officer. On this date, in 1915, the U.S. House of Representatives rejected 204 to 174 a proposed constitutional amendment to give women nationwide the right to vote. In 1948, the U.S. Supreme Court in Sipul versus Board of Regents of University of Oklahoma unanimously ruled that state law schools could not discriminate against applicants on the basis of race. In 1969, the New York Jets of the American Football League upset the Baltimore Colts of the National Football League 16-7 in Super Bowl III, played at the Orange Bowl in Miami. In 1971, the groundbreaking situation comedy All in the Family premiered on CBS television. In 2010, Haiti was struck by a magnitude 7 earthquake. The Haitian government said 316,000 people were killed, while a report prepared for the U.S. Agency for International Development suggested the death toll may have been between 46,000 and 85,000. Today's birthdays. Political commentator Rush Limbaugh is 70. Radio, TV personality Howard Stern is 67. Entrepreneur Jeff Bezos is 57. Contemporary Christian singer Jeremy Camp is 43. Source, Associated Press.
This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, "You Can't Blame the Media for What Happened," by Megan McArdle, Washington Post Writers Group. One tragic aspect of what occurred at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday is that many of the insurrectionists who stormed Congress seem to have sincerely believed they were fighting for justice, making a last desperate effort to stop Congress from knowingly certifying fraudulent election results. If such a thing were actually happening, I'd be pretty sympathetic to the patriots who risked their lives to prevent it. Of course, their belief was unfounded. But these weren't election experts. They were ordinary people who had gotten bad information from others they assumed were in a position to know. Which is, uncomfortable thought, the same way we all learn most of what we think we understand. If we were similarly misled, some of us might well become similarly unhinged. Though that can't excuse insurrection. Every member of the mob who attacked the seat of American democracy should be identified, arrested, and tried. It does point us toward the people who bear even greater responsibility for the debacle. Their delusion was carefully nurtured by the crybaby in the Oval Office, who was too much of a loser even to admit he lost. President Donald Trump was abetted in his attempt to overturn legitimate election results by every politician or pundit who refused to denounce him, every one of whom must have known very well that there was no meaningful evidence of the alleged fraud. If they didn't, they remained ignorant only through strenuous personal effort. Even a brief glance at Trump's many lawsuits revealed his arguments as baseless tripe. Trump's apologists are now chattering fast and anxiously about everything else, and particularly the public's righteous anger at out-of-touch coastal elites, Democrats, and of course, a hypocritical mainstream media that wasn't nearly so hard on Democrat Stacey Abrams when she refused to concede in the 2018 Georgia gubernatorial election, nor so eager to see an overwhelming use of police force against Black Lives Matter protests. If you want to know why Trump's followers didn't trust you when you said he'd lost the election, they suggest, well, look in the mirror. Most of my colleagues in the mainstream media have justifiably refused to respond to this disingenuous deflection. Yet, there's just enough truth buried in there to make it worth addressing and explaining why, in the end, it just won't do. For I agree that the mainstream media has a dangerous credibility problem on the right. Trump's followers increasingly live in an epistemic bubble that inconvenient facts simply can't penetrate because Trump-friendly media doesn't report them, and their audiences assume, with some reason, that mainstream media is actively playing for the other team. We like to tell ourselves it's all the fault of Fox News, but we've contributed our share to causing this epistemic closure. We've also helped harden the epistemic bubble on the left, but that's another column. Those on the right can see the many journalists on Twitter who deride them as racist troglodytes. They can see how easily stories find purchase on mainstream news pages if they flatter left-wing ideas or make the right look bad. They can see how hard it is to find stories that go in the other direction, and how gingerly such stories are treated if they do surface elsewhere. Much of this has been going on for longer than 4 years. The right is also well aware that Trump excited the media's special ire, for good reason, but nonetheless. So yes, we do bear some responsibility when Trump supporters ignore our assurances that the 2020 elections were about as fair and honest as elections ever are. Our leftward skew may well be a major reason Trump's followers are ignorant of the truth about November's elections. And yet, we're not the reason they actively believe a passel of lies. Someone, the president, made grave and groundless accusations aimed at undermining the integrity of a democratic election. A lot of other someones bolstered his lies when they humored him, because what can it hurt, or deflected any questions into meta-criticism of the mainstream media, or joined him by just asking questions, or called for investigations of something they knew hadn't happened, or simply stayed silent while the President of the United States conned his voters and tried to steal an election, and having failed, whipped up his marks into a dangerous mob that attacked the seat of government and got 4 insurgents and a police officer killed. The mainstream media didn't do any of that. Trump did, and his enablers helped. And if you could witness that disgrace and then decide to talk about the mainstream media's faults instead, well, at that point, it's not our credibility that's at stake. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, "If Twitter Doesn't Want Your Business, Make Other Plans," by Stuart Doreen. On Sunday, I read the following from Greg Gutfeld, probably the most interesting person on Claypool News. Okay, this is my last tweet. CNN tries to get Fox News Channel banned. Apple targets Parler. Publishers dump writers. Music labels drop artists. Twitter bans, removes thousands. Tech companies join hands. This redefines who the true rebels are. If you like the purge, you're the servant. Later, the Daily Wire offered that Gutfeld was joining other conservative personalities, Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levin, and Lou Dobbs, in leaving Twitter. The fact is, there's been a lot of hullabaloo about Twitter and other social media oligarchy and how they are trying to control the message. To my untrained eyes, it would appear those people have a point. I have talked to people asking if I'm mad about this, and I have said no. Why? If Twitter, Facebook, and others believe it is good business by offending tens of millions of Americans, they are free to do so. I wish them the best of luck. Meanwhile, instead of complaining about the unlevel playing field, I believe the conservative commentators mentioned earlier are setting the right path for those willing to follow. Don't like Twitter? Go elsewhere. Surely, if we have learned anything over the past two decades, capitalism will show us the way. AOL, Netscape, MySpace, and chat boards were replaced. So who knows what is in store for us over the next 30 years? There are people out there that can create their own social media opportunities to engage whatever audience they see fit. Think of the tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars spent on the 2020 campaigns across the nation. A fraction of that conservative buy likely would have laid the foundation for the next in a generation of social media channels. Sure, there will be speed bumps. Parler knows this firsthand. The social network, according to cybernews.com, was hit by a massive data scrape. Security researchers collected swaths of user data before the network went dark Monday morning after Amazon, Google, and Apple booted the platform. The scrape includes user profile data, user information, and which users had administration rights for specific groups within the social network. I believe business should have the opportunity to operate as it chooses. If we claim a business got too big, well, shame on us for not creating competition. If a radio station doesn't want to play a certain band, no problem. If a sports team believes it wants to hold on to or ditch a mascot, that is its prerogative. And if social media believes it's good business to shut down Republican thought, then it has to do what it has to do, I guess. It was often reported that basketball all-timer Michael Jordan, for years and decades, remained politically neutral because, quote, Republicans buy sneakers too, unquote. If someone wants to approach their business differently, to one political side or another, then he or she should be able to. Making that company pay for not remaining neutral, that power belongs to you, and it always has. This column is entitled, Finally, We've Seen the Last Straw, by Kathleen Parker, Washington Post Writers Group. We've seen at last the long elusive final straw for Donald Trump, an insurgent breach of the U.S. Capitol marshaled by the President of the United States himself. This was not a drill. It was an American tragedy. The straw finally materialized on the strangest day, following the strangest year in most of American history. Republicans, many of them at work on the floor of the House and Senate, finally saw and felt for the first time what millions of other Americans have seen and sensed since day one of Trump's presidency. The words Trump has spoken and actions he has taken finally and very nearly brought the Republic tumbling down. I expected the final straw long before January 6, 2021. I'd lost count of the number of times I thought that surely this raw comment or that reckless tweet would be the one that did him in. Surely this time someone would call him out. But for years, most Republicans defended Trump and cheered him on, dismissed the danger he posed, and pretended not to see his obvious decline mentally, morally, and ethically. I long ago gave up hope that the GOP would confront this delusional man and send him back to wherever he's welcome. The clamoring mob that overtook the Capitol, forcing legislatures, security officers, aides, and journalists to hit the ground and say their prayers, was apparently what it took to break the back of a party in thrall. Trump kept a low profile through most of it. After rioters had taken up residence inside the Capitol, one mounting the Senate dais, another propping a foot up on a desk in House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office, the leader of the so-called free world choked out something about, quote, law and order, and asked his personal militia to stand down. But first, he cajoled them with his favorite lie. They had been cheated. He did nothing to tell them he had misled them in service of his own ego, which meant they could all go home or to the local pub and comfort each other in the knowledge that they were true patriots. It was shocking to see, horrifying to watch. The attack on our Congress and the five deaths that resulted was something we expect to see in other countries, not in the United States of America. I commented to my son that I was glad my father was not alive to see it. Members of the Greatest Generation who grew up during the Depression and fought the Second World War wouldn't be able to comprehend how we let this happen. Their disappointment might have broken them when war could not. Not so Senators Josh Hawley, Republican Missouri, and Ted Cruz, who, as my father might say, couldn't hold up the socks of men like President George W. Bush or Senator Mitt Romney, Republican Utah, or for that matter, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky, all of whom spoke eloquently against Trump's treasonous tactics. Hawley and Cruz, whose names can now be found in the dictionary under the word tool, led the opposition to certifying Arizona's Electoral College votes, becoming agents of King Trump's madness and giving cover to the insurrectionists crawling over walls, breaking glass, and terrifying members of Congress. It's a shame that tar and feathering has gone out of style. Both men will be lucky to escape censure. A few other Trump devotees have made symbolic gestures of stern disapproval. Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, resigned Thursday, along with McConnell's wife, Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. Mick Mulvaney, who served as Trump's first budget director and more recently as an envoy for Northern Ireland, followed suit. With only a few days left in Trump's presidency, their outrage fell short of heroic. The terrible scene at the Capitol will not soon leave our memories, thanks in part to the mental imprint of bare-chested barbarians wearing animal horns, animal skins, horned helmets, and other memorabilia from their loopy imaginary lives on Planet Q. These are the people Trump considers his compatriots, along with those Republican sycophants who've yet to discover their spines. Invoking the 25th Amendment, as some suggested, might have shaved a day or two from Trump's craziness, but it will take years to undo the damage he has inflicted on our land, our national security, and the stability of the world. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, January 12, 2021. Beverly Girdley Keaton. Beverly Girdley Keaton, age 74, died on December 29, 2020, in Austin, Texas. She was born in Newport News, Virginia, to Mary and B.C. Girdley. Beverly was raised in Midland, Texas, where she graduated from Robert E. Lee High School in 1964. Beverly is survived by her sister, Debbie Crockett of Austin, her brother Bill Girdley of Keller, her nephew Beau Crockett and wife Brooke of Austin, her niece Kristen Serp and husband Mike of Burney, her niece M.C. Martin and husband Joe of Houston, and much-loved relative Sue Beth Lane Alvis of Austin. Beverly cherished her eight great-nieces and nephews and her friends that were family, Barbara Boyle, Kathy Reckage, and Karen Viger. Beverly was preceded in death by her parents, Mary and B.C. Girdley, her brother-in-law Mike Crockett, and her dear relative Jim Alvis. A private family memorial will be held later in the spring. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Texas Book Festival, 1023 Springdale Road, number 14B, Austin, Texas, 78721, or the Salvation Army Austin Area Command, 4700 Manor Road, Austin, 78723. Ora May Wortham Wallace. Ora May Wortham Wallace gained her heavenly wings on Wednesday, January 6th in Midland at Midland Memorial Hospital. Ora May was born May 2nd, 1932 in Roxton, Texas, to Gus and Addie Wortham. Both parents precede her in death. Ora May married R.L. Sonny Wallace in 1950, and he precedes her in death. She is survived by her three daughters, Esther R. Wallace, Bertha M. Wallace, Beverly A. Alexander. One son, R.L. Wallace Jr., all of Midland. Two sisters, Eleanor Harrington of Markham, Illinois, and Irma Jean Henderson of Fort Worth. Three grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, and a host of nieces, nephews, relatives, and special friends. Funeral services for Ora Mae Wortham Wallace, 88, of Midland, Texas, will be Wednesday, January 13th at 1 p.m. at New Jerusalem Missionary Baptist Church, with Pastor Michael D. Wheeler officiating. Interment will be in the Fairview Cemetery under the direction of Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Viewing will be held on Tuesday, January 12th at Jackie Warren Funeral Home from 2 to 8 p.m. Pearl Nunez. Pearl Nunez, 73, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, January 9th in Midland after a long battle with Parkinson's disease. Pearl was born in Marfa, Texas, to Raimundo and Hortensia Ceniceros. Pearl Nunez, beloved wife of Ruben Nunez, much-loved mother of James Nunez, cherished grandmother of J.R. Nunez, dear sister of Clen Ceniceros Rosa, Nora Reyes Rogelio, Ruby Sakura Roque, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her father Raimundo and mother Hortensio Ceniceros and her sister Yvonne Cano. Private services will be held at a later date. Family and friends may share condolences and sign the online register book at www.npwelch.com. In lieu of flowers, we welcome you to honor Pearl in a memorial donation to theparkinson.org. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Death notices. Maria Camarillo. Maria Camarillo, 63, of Midland, passed away January 8th. Viewing will be from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, January 13th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Thursday, January 14th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Friday, January 15th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, with interment followed at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Soterra L. Ramos. Soterra L. Ramos, age 94, of Midland, passed away on January 9th. A viewing will be held Tuesday, January 12th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, Chapel, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary being recited at 7 p.m. A funeral service will be Wednesday, January 13th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, Chapel, at 10 a.m., followed by a graveside service in Snyder Cemetery in Snyder, Texas, at 2 p.m. She leaves to cherish her memory, her son, Willie Ramos, and two daughters, Margaret Dutchover and Sabina Ramos. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Tim Trevino. Tim Trevino, 34, of Midland, passed from this life on December 31st at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was born on May 8, 1986, to Hippolito and Maria Candelaria Trevino in Midland. He is survived by three children, Zaylin Trevino, Skyra Trevino, and Lexis Trevino, his longtime girlfriend, Susan Wardo, and his mother, Maria Candelaria Trevino, and eight siblings. A celebration of life will be held on Wednesday, January 13th, 6 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. Stop the spread. Wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. Front page. Mayor wants to thank healthcare workers. City Council meets today at First Odessa by Federico Martinez, F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z, at OAOA.com. Odessa City Council will honor and recognize former Mayor David Turner and former council members Michael Shelton, Peggy Dean, and Dewey Bryant for their years of public service during a 6 p.m. council meeting today. The meeting will be held in the Commons area of First Odessa Church, 709 North Lee Avenue. New Mayor Javier Hoven has also requested an opportunity to recognize local healthcare efforts in caring for COVID-19 patients. I wanted to thank the local hospitals on how well the first round of vaccinations were administered, Hoven said. I wanted an opportunity that would allow me to just say thank you and great job. Medical Center Hospital, Odessa Regional Medical Center, and Scenic Mountain Medical Center last week announced they had vaccinated a combined total of more than 4,000 people within 2 weeks. It's believed that Ector County currently leads the state in distributing vaccinations, but Texas Department of State Health Services said they can't officially confirm that. City Council last week resumed public meetings after months of participating in virtual meetings. Hoven said he would like council to continue holding meetings at different locations to give more residents an opportunity to attend. Due to COVID-19 distancing guidelines, meetings must be held in locations large enough to accommodate residents. Council's normal meeting location is not large enough to accommodate more than a handful of people, officials have said. Council on Tuesday is also expected to approve the purchase of 35 sets of personal protective equipment for the fire department. The total cost of the purchase, which will be paid for through the fire department's budget, is $79,893.10, according to Odessa Fire Rescue Chief John Alvarez. Mr. UTPB, University of Texas Permian Basin graduate Romeo Ramirez, smiles as he is presented with his bachelor's degree by his criminology professor, Richard Keekbush, during a graduation presentation Thursday in the Mesa Building. Ramirez is a wheelchair-bound student with cerebral palsy, graduating with a Bachelor of Arts degree with a concentration in criminology. Ramirez plans to pursue a master's degree in criminology and then hopes to go on to work for the Federal Bureau of Investigation as profiler. Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Mr. UTPB completes his bachelor's, wants to become an FBI profiler by Ruth Campbell, R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. Through iron will and determination, Romeo Ramirez has received his diploma for a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from the University of Texas Permian Basin. Ramirez, who has cerebral palsy and is wheelchair-bound, was presented with his sheepskin by Associate Professor of Criminology Richard Keekbush Thursday at the Mesa Building. Ramirez is known around campus as Mr. UTPB. Ramirez says he loves UTPB because it's in his blood. He indicated he also has a UTPB logo tattoo. His grandmother, Della Currier, who attended the ceremony, also earned her bachelor's in criminology from UTPB. This has been a childhood dream, Ramirez said. He said choosing UTPB was easy. when Ramirez started at UTPB, he had to come from Buena Vida Nursing and Rehabilitation, which was a mile and a half from campus. At first, the nursing home brought him to school, but then he had to take his wheelchair. Courier said Ramirez now lives in the dorms on campus. I knew what I was in for when I signed up for this, so I did it without hesitation, Ramirez said. He got the moniker Mr. UTPB from a friend who was a petroleum engineering student. Ramirez said freshmen who don't even know him greet him as Mr. UTPB. He added that it took him 5 years to complete his degree with a minor in psychology, and he plans to stay on for a master's and eventually become a profiler for the FBI. Ramirez said he's had a lot of help from everyone at the university. This is like one giant family, Ramirez said. The terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001 are what made Ramirez decide to pursue criminology. Because I can't go serve in the United States military, I thought I could serve here at home, serve and protect, and that is what I hope to do by the time everything is said and done, Ramirez said. Originally from Odessa, Ramirez went to Bangs High School in Bangs and Brownwood High School in Brownwood. I had just been moved all over Texas until 2019 when I decided to come back to start this chapter of my life, he said. He wants to go on for a master's degree to prove to other people with disabilities that if he can do it, so can they. I want to set a positive example, Ramirez said. Cerebral palsy is a birth defect that supposedly affects physical and mental capacity, he said. I don't think it affected my mental capacity because I'm here graduating, or graduated technically, Ramirez said. When he started, he said he didn't think he would make it through the first semester. I'm extremely proud of myself, but as I said, I have a lot of other people who I owe a great deal of thanks to for getting me where I am. One of them is my grandmother. The other one is Richard Keekbush. And there are several others who asked me not to mention them, but I'm going to anyway. Abby Daniels and her staff down in the testing center. Without them, I wouldn't be who I am, let alone where I am, he said. His advice to others is never take no for an answer. Never let somebody tell you no, because if you do, you won't ever make it anywhere. I am where I am because I didn't listen to the word no, and my grandmother, she can tell you I still don't listen to the word no, Ramirez said. Courier, a retired elementary school teacher, said she was very proud of Ramirez. She encouraged him to go to college because he was at loose ends. He's had a hard time of it, but he's managed, Courier said. I'm very proud of him. I am very proud of him, Courier said. Keekbush said what Ramirez has achieved is quite an accomplishment. I wish that all of my students had his intensity of motivation and determination, he said. Hail damage claims viewed. Sheriff gets $14,175 in donations from local supporters. OA News at OAOA.com. Meeting for the first time, the newly reconstituted Ector County Commissioner's Court today will consider signing sworn statements to cover more than $1 million in hail damages to county buildings from storms that battered Odessa more than 3 years ago. Human Resources Risk Management Coordinator Sam Brijawa will review claims for losses totaling $671,137 on June 14, 2017, and $401,146 on March 28 that year to Atlantic Specialty Insurance Company of Canton, Massachusetts. In other business, during the 10 a.m. session in the administration building at 1010 East 8th Street, the court will accept donations to the sheriff's office of $75 from Philip Godwin, $100 from Judith Hayes, $2,000 from the Ettrick County Republican Party, and $12,000 from the Barnhart Bolt and Special Fasteners Company. Public Works Director Evans Kesey will report on the road and street improvements that were made in 2020 and his 2021 project proposals. The court's newcomers are Commissioners Mike Gardner in Precinct 1 and Don Stringer in Precinct 3, who succeeded Eddie Shelton and Dale Childers, respectively. They join Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons, Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez, and Judge Debbie Hayes on the panel. The court will also get an annual update from Texas A&M AgriLife Extension agent Steve Paz. Consider 2-year appointments to the Airport Advisory Board for Richard Browning, Mark Merritt, Winston Kenworthy, Travis Fisher, and Monty Sparkman. Discuss nominating Levi Bryant of the LCA Civil Engineering Company to the Region 14 Upper Rio Grande Regional Flood Planning Group. Accept the City of Odessa's donation of 70 Motorola XDS 2500 single-band 800 megahertz radios for use by county volunteer fire departments. Consider a resolution adopting the Texas Local Government Investment Pool's Term Sheet Program, which creates investments for cities, counties, school districts, and other public investors. Review a payment application from Johnson Controls, which is about one-third finished with its $6.9 million contract to upgrade lights and heating, air conditioning in county buildings, including the replacement of all 87 Freon air conditioning units, the replacement of all lights with light-emitting diodes, and the installation of 2 chillers at the courthouse. All buildings are getting new air conditioning except the library. Consider seeking a grant through the Permian Basin Regional Planning Commission for the purchase of rifle-resistant body armor for the Environmental Enforcement Department. Review making overtime pay permanent for all county employees. Discuss a $62,228 budget transfer from motor vehicle repairs and maintenance to equipment services. Consider spending $9,200 for diagnostic software for diesel and construction equipment. Review accepting certification of tax assessor collector Lindy Wright's completion of 20 hours of continuing education.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.